Welcome back to the Expert Witness Playbook. My name's Chris Woody Woodruff. I'll be your interviewer and newbie expert witness. But what we're going to talk about today is the why. And why should someone be an expert witness? And we'll go in some details. Last episode, we touched upon a few things, but in this one, I really want to go deep. And so people actually can sit down and think about why they want to do this and make a decision. Some people, after watching this, may decide this might not be for them.
That is true.
But they should be told what it takes, because watching you as my brother, you work your butt off. So it takes a lot of time and dedication to do this work, because you're also a physician that meets with patients.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about time and qualifications and perseverance and dedication and everything. So, Brian, but...
Yeah, I'm going to introduce myself again now that we're on episode two. And again, I'm Brian Woodruff. I'm a board-certified pediatric neurologist, and I've been an expert witness for about 15 years. And I got into it very slowly, and sort of my why is that it was incredibly interesting, and I could see there was a huge need. And that's going to tie into, we'll talk about sort of a niche in a minute, but as a pediatric neurologist, I got started on a case. It was an automobile case. It was a head injury. And then that referral led to somebody else calling me because the attorney gave out my name, and that got it going. And sort of the why is that it's super interesting to review these cases. Almost always, even after being in practice for 20-some years, I learn something new from these cases about the clinical medicine also. And I find the legal side to be very interesting, that whole process on the legal side to be quite interesting. The why also is that this is really needed. Cases either can't be brought forward to help somebody, or they can't be defended without experts. At least in my field in medicine, every case has at least one expert on each side. And many of the cases that I'm involved in have 5 to 10 different experts on each side answering specific questions. And so that's really my why, is that it is something that's essential. You're helping others and you're learning. And to be honest, you do get paid. Let's acknowledge you get paid, and it is a way to supplement income. And so anybody that denies that is not being honest.
No. So Brian, there was an interesting story that you had about a recent interaction with a lawyer. Can you tell me that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I pride myself on is responsiveness. I'm known as an expert that's probably one of the most responsive experts that are out there. It's because I get back with people right away, whether they call me or email me. And those are the two primary ways that I'm contacted. Last week, actually, I was contacted by an attorney. He sent me an email, and anytime I get an email, one of the things that I will recommend to you is follow up with a phone call. There's nothing better than getting a chance to talk with somebody, and you'll learn a lot about the case that you're not going to learn about. And we're going to talk more about that initial call in a future episode, because it's going to be really important what to do in an initial call. But that initial call, what I was able to gather was that this case was under a tight timeline. There was not a lot of work that needed to be done. And the attorney needed something turned around within a week. But I could tell that he was really worried and he was panicked. And I said, get the information over to me. And I had never met him before. He seemed like a nice guy. And he worked within a big firm. And so I wanted to impress him. And so I got the information. I reviewed it. I turned around a report before the end of the day and got a hold of him. And I got a call back within like 30 minutes from the attorney just stating the fastest turnaround. He had been practicing, I think he said, for 30 years. It was the fastest turnaround. And he was so impressed. And he, without me asking, he said, my associates will all know about this. And so it's, you know, finding a way to separate yourself from the crowd.
Yeah.
That's, and that's going to probably lead into, we should talk about sort of a niche.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, qualifications and a niche.
Yeah.
So you have to have some type of expertise. So in my case, I'm in technology.
I wanted to hear about your niche.
So my niche is really, I've been doing software development and architecture for 30 years. So that's my niche is I can read code. I can see where mistakes happened. I can go back through emails and I can go back through all of the history of the software and find problems and find where either side made mistakes.
Okay.
That come about. And it's probably the same thing with a doctor. You have to review the case and you have to take a look at the history and you have to take a look at everything and figure out what you need. But so let's talk about bare qualifications in your opinion. Now these are not legally binding. So I just want to make it clear that we are just giving our advice about qualifications in the niche.
Right. So if you need legal advice, you need to talk to an attorney. So what I would say as a bare minimum as far as in the medical field is that you have graduated from medical school, you have done postgraduate training, and in whatever field you are in, you have taken and have achieved board certification. And you should have a few years of experience in the field and be working in that field. I think that's the bare minimum. Board certification, as most people understand, is an external organization that has tested you, looked at your training, and said you have achieved a certain level that they can put out and say you are board certified. And so that I find from the medical side of things, that's the bare minimum. And then, you know, going into something we talked about before, you know, you have this amazing niche that, you know, you've been doing something within coding software and architecture for a lot of years. And what people need to do is they need to think about, all right, what is my niche going to be? Some professions lead themselves, some specialties lead themselves to a fairly easy niche. Pediatric neurology is something that is needed often. And other things may not be as common. I have friends that are in family practice, but they do nursing home care. And that there's a lot of litigation related to nursing homes. And from what I understand, sort of falls and care within nursing homes. And so they have created a niche. So you need to think about what is it about my specialty that within the legal setting, there are going to be questions that I can answer. And so I think one of the things in this episode we should talk briefly about, at least in medicine, how a case is set up and what sort of questions, and we're going to go into this a lot more in depth in the future, but creating a niche, you need to understand what questions you may be asked.
Yeah.
And so there's sort of three parts to a medical malpractice case. The first is that somebody breached the standard of care, or it's alleged that somebody breached the standard of care. And it's the standard of care, and this is not legal advice, but how I interpret it and how I understand it is, what would a similar physician do? How would they treat somebody in a similar circumstance? And standard of care is not like superb care. It's what would a similar physician do under a similar circumstance. The second, so you may be asked a standard of care question, or you may be asked a causation question. And that is, did that breach in the standard of care cause some sort of damage? And that's the third part of a case, and that is the damages. And I would say 99% of the cases that I'm involved in are related to causation and damages, meaning that I am rarely asked about, did somebody breach the standard of care, or did somebody do something wrong? It's mostly about, I think of the causation as being the bridge. It's somebody's allegedly done something wrong, and the causation is the bridge to the damages. And from my understanding of cases, you have to, in order to be successful with a case, you have to be successful in all three of those areas. So, yep. So when you're thinking about a niche, you need to think about, do I have something to talk about? Standard of care, causation, damages.
Yeah. So let's take this to the next step. How much time does this work actually take?
So when you first start out, you're not going to be very busy. And you're going to need to put some effort into trying to make connections and contacts. And so you want to be able to have time to do that. And so I think the busyness, you can always turn, if you get so busy, you can turn away cases. And that I have gotten to that point where I only take the best cases and I turn away cases. And that's fun because I can pick and choose, and I am very busy, but I still have, a family and, responsibilities to, work clinically. And so it is a balancing act, but you need to have the time and the ability to respond. You need to be able to get back with people same day. That is, you cannot let an email sit a day or two, because they will move on and find another expert. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into being a successful expert. And we're going to talk about some of the techniques and the things that you're going to need in the next few episodes to stay on top of things. And that's related to just managing medical records and radiology and everything that goes into that. Because you need to put in place systems. This is very different than managing a medical practice, which I did. I was in private practice for 12 years. I was really good at managing a medical practice. I had no idea on how to manage an expert practice. And some of my mistakes and trials and errors and what has become successful for me to manage an expert witness practice, we're going to talk about in the next few episodes.
Yeah. But the whole thing is you need to be disciplined. You need to be on top of things, meet deadlines, because these lawyers they have deadlines themselves. So they have to give you a deadline and you have to meet those deadlines, or raise a flag to say, I can't get that done within that amount of time, right?
Absolutely. These lawyers have deadlines that have been set by the court. They have deadlines that have been set by judges that they need reports in at certain times. and they can get in trouble. They can get sanctioned. Their case could blow up when an expert doesn't come in. So being, I can't stress enough, being on time and being really diligent about deadlines is super important. If you are a person that's chronically late and you deliver late, this is probably not going to be, because you know, you brought up a great point. Being on time is one of the most critical things.
Yeah.
Being an expert.
Yeah, you need to manage expectations.
Yes, you got to understand it. That's one of the things I'm always asking. When is this due? When is that due? And I create artificial deadlines ahead of time. I want to deliver early. I want to exceed expectations. I want to deliver things early at a quality level that goes beyond what they expect. And so that's one of the techniques I use is, if I hear, all right, they have a deadline of October 30th, in my mind, they're going to get a report on October 20th.
Yeah. So in the end, the key is you need to have the qualifications. You need to find that niche. You need to also understand and build that reputation. And I think the most important is you have to be honest with yourself to know, do I have enough time to put towards this? And do I have the discipline to meet deadlines and exceed expectations and make these lawyers happy? Because in your case, you're basically, it's very important, because you're reflecting on the care from damages, like you said, of in your field, of a child.
Yeah. So I think there are two other things that, before we close out, we need to talk about. And one is the idea of honesty. That's kind of one of the keys. It should go without saying, but you need to be honest when you're looking through these records, and you need to be honest with the attorneys. There are unscrupulous attorneys out there that have asked me to addend reports, which I've never done, that because you have to stay honest to the process and honest to what the records, your training experience, and education support. Yep. And you need to be able to tell attorneys what your opinions are, even if they don't support their case. Yeah. And that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Whether
yeah.
you're on the plaintiff side or the defense yeah. side.
So that brings up, and we'll have that in future episodes, the ethics of being an expert witness.
Yeah.
That's important, to understand the ethics and meet those ethics and stay honest, even when it might not be good for at least the lawyer's case.
Yeah.
But with that, we've gone kind of long as it is on this episode. So let's wrap up.
Let's wrap up. Sounds good.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. But if you like this, please go down, subscribe on YouTube. If you're listening to this audio, share with a friend or other colleagues. But we would love to hear from you also, to know what you are going through, and maybe Brian can give you some advice privately. So I just want to say thank you again. My name's Chris Woodruff.
And I'm Brian Woodruff, pediatric neurology expert.
Yeah. And you can find more of Brian's information out on childneurologyexpert.com. We'll have that link in the show notes. And also, you probably see it on the screen right now anyway. But thanks, Brian.
Yeah, thanks.
We'll talk to you.
Yeah, we'll talk
episode
soon.
Episode 3 coming up thanks. In a week or two.